Kennedy was born in 1928 in Albany, New York, a town immortalized in many of his novels. Kennedy's Albany cycle includes Legs, Billy Phelan's Greatest Game, Ironweed, winner of the 1984 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction, and the National Book Critics Circle Award, Quinn's book, Very Old Bones, The Flaming Corsage, and Roscoe. Booklist describes his newest work, Chongo's Beads and Two-Tone Shoes, as a jazzy, seductive, historically anchored novel of politics and romance, race and revolution. After serving in the Army, Kennedy lived in Puerto Rico, where he met his mentor, Saul Bellow. While living in San Juan, he befriended journalist author Hunter Thompson, a friendship that continued throughout their careers. Kennedy worked for the Albany Times-Union as an investigative journalist, writing stories exposing activities of the O'Connell political machine there. Often called the Bard of Albany, Kennedy uses his hometown as the setting for eight of his novels. Book critic Jonathan Yardley states that Kennedy has painted a portrait of a single city, perhaps unique in American fiction. Welcome, William. Thanks for stopping by the Book Report.
Well, I'm very happy to be here. It's my first time at the book fair.
The cast of characters in your new book is staggering. Bing Crosby, Hemingway, Fidel, priests and provocateurs. How did you assemble this literary gang?
Well, Crosby made a record a long time ago with the Mills Brothers called Shine, and I was determined to put that into a novel for the last 15 years. And so I finally figured it out that I wrote the scene, which is the opening scene of the novel, Crosby, 1936. And I've been a Crosby fan for all my life, but these records that he made with the Mills Brothers in 1931 are just extremely fantastically great. This book is about, in large part, about the civil rights movement in the 60s. It takes place, second half of the book takes place in 1968, on the day Bobby Kennedy is shot, June the 5th. And during about 12 hours, and the city is in great ferment, and there's rioting of some small order, and then becomes worse as the day goes on. And then there's racial tensions and other dimensions of activist priest has been silenced, and things are in an uproar. Also, it has Fidel, because I worked in Miami here in 1957 on the Miami Herald. I was a reporter. My beat was Cuba, and the Cubans in Miami, not down in Cuba. We didn't have anybody stationed there. People came and went, but it was a great time. And then Fidel was already at this time up in the hills. And Quinn, my main character, Daniel Quinn, who has a career somewhat parallel to my own. He worked in the Herald, and then he quits and goes to Cuba. And in a sense, I did that, but not really. I went to Cuba much later and several times, but I was in Puerto Rico for a number of years, and I was very close to what was happening in Cuba. And anyway, the young man meets Hemingway in the bar the first night he's in Cuba. The first three nights he's in Cuba. Third night he finally meets Hemingway, and he also runs into this beautiful girl who's with her brother-in-law, and he falls instantly in love with her and follows up the next day. And she is a part of the rebellion that's going to try and kill Batista. She's a gun runner, and she's a debutante, and wealthy and intelligent. And her name is Renata, and Quinn pursues her, and their love story begins with a bang right away, you know, and it follows the whole novel.
How did you choose the title?
Well, part of Renata, the beauty, the gun-running beauty, is a follower of the Santeria religion. She's raised Catholic, but as in many people in Cuba, and not overwhelmingly many, but many, they do practice Santeria. It's basically a religion that came from the slaves from Africa, and was over the centuries it was blended with Catholicism to make it more acceptable to the Spanish colonial slave owners, and so they didn't think that this religion was a form of revolution by the slaves. So they fused the two religions, a syncretic religion, with these two religions taken together. And one in the Santeria religion there are what they call orishas. There's 4 or 5 dozen of them, and one of them is Xangô, who is a great warrior and a womanizer and in control of lightning and thunder, and he's a great presence and a great he's the most popular of the Orishas, and in especially in Ivana. And so I came across him and I decided to use him, and I was given a set of beads, Xangô's beads, as a kind of good luck thing, and he's represented by red and white beads, and I had those beads, and I had figured I should use them. They played out like a rosary I used to have when I was a kid, and I used that in another novel. But the beads became an artifact of the theme of rebellion and war and trying to achieve your goals and happiness in this life. And so Xangô's beads, and they were an element, and somebody said, well, you should, my researcher said, you should call the book Xangô's Beads. Well, I said, that only cuts half the mustard, you know? And then I said, I know, yeah, two-tone shoes. Because the two-tone shoes, I had them when I was a kid. I haven't seen them lately. But they're like wingtips, and they're brown and white or black and white. And that's what one of my characters in Albany during the 1968 city uprising, and he's a black wino named Tremont Van Ort, and he's a terrific guy, and he's a drunk, and he's very tough and very lost, and but he becomes a principal figure because he's a pawn in a political move to discredit some of the black movements in the city that are speaking out against the status quo and against the politicians.
Now, you've been called the Bard of Albany, and I know that your house that you currently live in has a big history. Tell us about that for a moment.
Well, I have two houses, but one house in Albany is notable because it's the place where the gangster Jack Legs Diamond was murdered in December 14th, 17th, I'm not sure, 1931. And we were going to make a movie of my novel, Legs, in which Jack Diamond is the principal character. And he was very famous in the East. He was the most famous gangster of the 20s in the East. And he moved to Albany to live during the last year of his life or so, the better part of it. And he lived down in the Catskill Mountains, and he kept coming to Albany all the time. He was very well known. He was in the papers every day. And he was like a rock star, or a movie star would be today. And he was there after he had been acquitted in December 1931 of a kidnapping and torturing a truck driver who wouldn't tell him where he was going with 27 barrels of cider, hard cider. And the fellow went in to get a pistol permit and told the police that Diamond had tortured him, and that broke Diamond's empire. And the governor at the time was Franklin D. Roosevelt, he was on his way to the White House. This is 1931, and he becomes he gets elected in 32. But so he sent the troops in. He sent the state police and the attorney general, and they just wiped that Diamond's empire off the face of the Catskills. And he was dealing in 18 counties. He was a big gangster, Prohibition era. And then he was told to stay out of Albany, but he came back and he took up a couple of rooms for his wife and his sister-in-law and her kid, so who were with him at the trial in Troy, New York. And he went back there after the party. And he was drunk, and the two guys came in and told him that he was supposed to not come back to Albany. And they put three bullets in his head. And that was the end of Jack Diamond. The room where they did that is now my office.
Haunted?
I used to have a lamp that went on and off, and people thought it was Jack saying hello.
Well, thanks so much for stopping by today. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.